Pearson Rabbit's story begins with Dr. Stephanie Pearson, a passionate OB-GYN at the height of her career. But when a shoulder injury struck during a precipitous delivery, her dreams were shattered, leaving her unable to practice medicine. Determined to make a difference, Stephanie became an advocate for her peers, guiding them through the complex disability process. Stephanie founded Pearson Rabbit, a company determined to approach insurance differently. It's hard to imagine that a sudden illness or injury could leave you and your family in a devastating financial situation. Visit PearsonRabbits.com today to schedule your consultation with a Pearson Rabbits advisor.
Financial Residency is proud to bring you Grand Rounds with Dr. Tammy. Each week, Tammy Krause explores a new topic related to achieving financial independence by building and protecting your wealth. She invites guests who are experts in their fields who will share honest and valuable advice on a variety of topics. If you have an idea for a podcast, please email Tammy, that's T-A-M-M-Y, at financialresidency.com. Now grab your front row seat to this week's Grand Rounds.
Hi, and welcome back to Grand Rounds. We have featured many physicians on this podcast who have been innovative and entrepreneurial, and today is no exception. I actually invited our guest on here to talk about a company that I had heard about on social media, but in talking with him before the show, he is more fantastic, more entrepreneurial than I ever could have imagined. So I'm excited to introduce you guys to Dr. Ramon Lizardo today. Hi, Ramon, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thank you so much for the invite. I'm excited and above all grateful to be here chatting with you today, Tammy.
Oh, I am too. So the company I had initially heard about was Tele911, and I thought that was all we were going to talk about today. But I guess let's get to know you first. You know, where did you train and kind of what was your motivation for getting into the business side of things?
Really good question. I trained in emergency medicine over in here in New Jersey, Robert Wood. But I always tell people I will be. Maybe a physician again. I left the field about 12 years ago in order to pursue a higher calling. I really left blindly. I actually did not know where I was going to land or what was going to happen. And little by little, I started putting the pieces together and brought in the right mentors who basically got me to the point that I am now. But I'm a native of New Jersey, grew up here. I live in Princeton on an awesome farm with chickens and just some amazing neighbors, honestly, which I'm thankful for. And above all, I tell people, outside of a physician and a CEO, I'm a father and a husband to Valentina and Lucas, which are the joys of my life, honestly.
Now, you had told me about your first venture into business. Can you share that with the audience?
Absolutely. I think it goes back to the story of my parents. So my parents are immigrants to this country. They were janitors. As a matter of fact, I lived 7 minutes away from the toilets they used to clean. And to me, I specifically live in this house because I want my kids to understand where we are coming from. So my parents always instilled in me the value of hard work. They ended up going to school, did well. They actually went into investment banking themselves and were very successful. But I was called to build my own name, as with every son. As I wrapped up clinical training, I learned about consulting. So there are a few major consulting companies, McKinsey, Deloitte, Bain, Boston Group, and I was able to join Deloitte Consulting Group. And I joined in the strategy and operations. Now, mind you, I was also the person that was reading Business Week during rounds all the time in medical school and residency. So I'm a bit of a different breed, right? But I feel like a lot of those building blocks were so critical to my success. When I was working clinically, I was actually building an app. I self-taught myself how to code. There's a lot of places where you could do that, Code Academy and a whole bunch of places. But I literally taught myself how to code and I built a small app. And it was an app to have doctors basically trade stocks on their downtime during their shift. And it was called the Morgan Stanley Health Pro. And the only reason it was called that because it was in a Morgan Stanley competition and it won some awards. And I realized, whoa, this is on to something. This is phenomenal. From there, I was able to join a very small company at the time that basically did social media management. So I would literally finish my shift at Robert Wood at like 7 a.m. And then I would take the bus from East Brunswick to downtown Manhattan. I worked at this company called Main Street Health during the day, right? That company, actually, we ended up scaling it and we grew it over 500 full-time employees. The company sold for $130 million.
Oh my gosh.
And I realized quite quickly that one, I was in charge of my own time and my own destiny by then. And two, I went back to my parents and I was like, hey, I kind of did a thing here, which is awesome. And that only took, just so you know, that was less than 3 years. So you're able to build stuff really fast as long as they're actually really useful in the tech space. At that point, I also connected with one of the people that helped scale Microsoft, literally through my boss at that company. And that person was Harry Patz, and Harry Patz was Bill's right hand, and he taught me how to do a merger and acquisition with Rubicon Partners. And from there, I was introduced to Mark Stormfield and Sam Jacobs, who built GOG, and I was one of the teams that built Livestream. By the way, Livestream, what people do nowadays constantly, even with Zoom and on Facebook Live, I was part of a doctor. I was part of that core team. And the reason why that came out was because I wanted people to be able to live stream classes, medical school classes, across all students across the US. Now it's become a whole other thing where people are like live streaming their day to day, but that's actually part of the story of like what we envisioned for that company. That company ended up selling for $210 over to Vimeo. And by then I was like, wait, now am I really a doctor? Because now I have like these trajectories. And from that team, I ended up, maybe I was like 32, and I was one of the advisors for Spotify, WeWork, and BuzzFeed. And it was honestly just an honor, one, to shed the light of the doctor and more into, hey, a successful entrepreneur. And from there, I basically joined my next venture with the Rubicon team. And that company recently sold for $290 million over to Oak and CVS. And I realized in the span of about 10 years, three different exits happened, and I was part of these growing teams, and it was basically the experience of a lifetime. I felt like I went through residency all over again. I felt like I went through medical school all over again, but I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful to still be in my 30s and be able to look back and say, wow, all this happened in a span of 10 years. I mean, mind you, for every one of those positive, I can tell you my failures too. Like I told the Flatiron Health team when there were three people, this will never work. And they sold for $1 billion 7 years later.
Right? Oh my gosh.
So I've had a lot of those failures as well. But you know, one of the things that I tell myself is I'm just thankful that I was in the room, right? Hearing about this and hearing Lyft, better to Uber being pitched. And I'm like, I don't know if this will work, right? We literally just have fun. And now I'm on to my next venture. And this is probably one of the most exciting ventures of all. I believe, just because emergency medicine is a lot of primary care, I believe that people do not need to be in the hospital. I believe that 80% of those calls should stay at home and be treated at home. I failed a few times actually building this company, and it wasn't until last year that we said, hey, let's try it. And I said, I just want to see 300 patients. And telling everyone's goal last year was to see 300 patients and we'll get to go. And we build a company that when the medics show up on the ambulance, they have an iPad, and basically they bring a board certified emergency doctor via the iPad to the patient, but they're treating them at home. And it was just such a simple idea, right? That we only needed 300 patients. And then what happened the next few months is we started seeing thousands of patients. And then by the end of the year, we cover 5 million patients.
Oh my gosh.
It's actually larger than the health system that I trained at. As of last week, we actually cover an entire state of Maryland. And we have a 2-year backlog. It's called the category killer type of company because it's really changing the space. And I tell people, this is actually a thank you letter to medics. Actually, there were a lot of medics. I finished undergrad at 20. So being an MD by 24 really doesn't make much sense, right? So I had no life experience and I was very book smart. And I remember the medics would drop patients off in the hospital and they would say, actually, Ramon, this one's really sick. Because it was the first time I was really having like true patient experience and that I was responsible for. And this is actually a thank you letter to them. It's a thank you letter for all medics to be able to use this, actually not have to take these patients to the hospital and be available for the true emergencies. What's happened along the way is that this is transforming literally the healthcare landscape on its end. So it's really an interesting company that's in the space right now and grateful to be leading it.
It sounds like a lot of your endeavors have been medicine adjacent. Do you feel like your training in medicine has kind of helped you move into this entrepreneurial path?
Absolutely. So I do believe this. It's so critical. Like I talk to so many healthcare leaders at some of the major companies, and it's really concerning when I see people without clinical experience leading these companies. People who've really never seen a patient or taken care of a patient or feel validated because they feel like they were a patient once. That is not enough. That will never be enough. Patient care, what we experience as doctors by going through all that undergrad and basic science and medical school and those 2 years of like clinical training plus 4 years of residency, that is so critical to our growth pattern and how we build companies today, because we're able to build it with the flow of the system and how patients actually think. I don't think I would be able to build a company like this if I wasn't frustrated in the hospital about the patients that did not need to be there, right? Mm-hmm. I would have built something adjacent to this, maybe a tech component to this, but not this, right? So my clinical experience is so key to building this company right now. And we have a lot of clinical leaders here. Some of them actually started off as some of our doctors, and I brought them under our wing, and basically now they lead some divisions, and some of them now sit on boards of companies that I invest in. Since I mentored them, I now put them on boards as representations of me, because I trust the knowledge that they've encapsulated, not just with clinical leaders, but also as business leaders as well.
I don't want to get too far into the weeds, but going back to like the tele-911, and you said you have an ER physician that kind of comes in on the iPad, talks to the patient in their home before they're transported. Maybe they prevent them from being transported. How do you handle like the billing side of that? Is that through the EMS company, or does that go back to the patient?
That's a really good question. So what's fascinating about this is that we're able to collect billing information quite fast. Actually, let's step back a bit.
Okay.
Do you know that a lot of the patients that call 911 expect to go to the hospital, and most of them have their bags packed? Yeah. So, and I always tell people, you and I have commercial insurance. We will drive ourselves to the hospital, or we'll call an Uber. Most of the U.S. population actually goes to the hospital by ambulance because they're under the notion that they're going to get there faster. And they're going to be triaged faster, right? Yeah. So when the ambulance actually shows up to the hospital, they have a bag pack, they have their insurance card and their ID. So with that same iPad, you basically take microseconds, take photos of that. It basically pushes it out to our system and automatically we start seeing the patient. There's no lapse between the insurance gathering and the patient being seen. We're going to see them regardless, by the way. Then eventually we'll bill them in or out of network if they're, depending on the facility that they're in.
Do the patients agree to be seen by the ER doctor in the house then? I assume there's an agreement on the patient side.
Patients love this.
Yeah?
Oh my God, yeah. So that's one of the most fascinating concepts. I actually thought that patients wouldn't want to do this. But think about it, because the patients are then told, hey, I'm going to bring in a board certified doctor here. If you go to the hospital, you might see a nurse. We have all the equipment here in the hospital that the hospital has. We can do an EKG. They can do blood work. They can pull an ID, right? You have everything that's needed. Most of the time, what they need is a script, right? And if you go through the system, we can deliver the script to you. Right. So they're like, wait, this is a better way. As a matter of fact, you know, one of the fascinating things about Kaiser is one of our major health plan partners. 72% of Kaiser patients that call 911 and go through tele-911 walk into their primary within 30 days. And that's when we realize, oh my God, we're actually changing patient behavior. And because of that, they basically brought us in and showed us how we're the future of healthcare, which I was really fascinated by.
That's amazing. I'd never thought of it on the emergency side of it before. As a hospitalist, we do a lot of hospitalist at home. So when you're leaving the hospital, try to get you out sooner. We set up the IV antibiotics, whatever. But I never thought about trying to prevent the hospitalization in the first place and free up the ER.
Yeah. You know what's funny, Tammy? And it's funny because now all these companies are trying to buy us out. I get multiple calls a week saying, billion-dollar companies saying, hey, we want to buy you. And the reason is everyone was trying to build the hospital at home or the next year. Mm-hmm. And no one looked at the front door. And
amazing.
I said, hey, let's just open the door, right? And one of the funny things that health plans say is, You know, we spend all this time and resources trying to find the patients to avoid an ER visit, and they've been at your house all this time alone, which is quite fascinating. But what's really cool is as we're talking right now, patients are walking in through our practice and experiencing this experience and getting better care faster and at a fraction of the price. When people see us, it's less than 30% of the overall cost would have they gone to the hospital. And think about it.
That's like incredible.
Less than 30%. So it just goes to show just how much value creation is being laid off and into the health plan space and to the patients.
Do you do any follow-up visits with those patients?
Yeah. So what's exciting about this is, once they see the patient and that encounter happens within 24 hours, our patient care coordinating team reaches back out to them and basically steers them in network, makes sure that they picked up their script. If not, helps them gather the resources that they need. We'll handhold them until they schedule their follow-up visit. And if they don't have a primary, we actually have another division and we function as your primary until we connect with a primary that's in your area. So what's interesting is, so over 70% of the patient or about 70% of the patients that call 911 and go through our system don't call again. And historically, that happens 5 more times throughout the course of the year. And it's because of that follow-up that's happening that basically it's on the continuum of care and how that mindset's changing.
So stepping back out of the weeds, thinking of other physicians and whatever specialty they're in, I think we all have ideas that we think would make our profession better. Can you talk about how did you get the financing or how do you do the marketing? You know, how do you kind of build this from the ground up?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So first thing first, I tell people, please write down your ideas. Tele-911 came out of a meal at Bojangles in North Carolina and Raleigh. And I always tell, I got to give the graphics to this, and every cardiologist is going to hate me. They sell seasoned fries, and I was dipping the seasoned fries in the chicken grease because it was so greasy. And as I put that in my mouth, I was like, oh my God, this is delicious. Mind you, we were at a medical conference, right? And then I took the napkin, the brown napkin, and I wet my hand, and I turned the napkin over and scribbled, what if people call 911 and instead of going to the hospital, got a doctor? I distinctly remember that moment. It's an indelible moment in my mind. And I tell people, please write down your ideas. Don't just think of, write them down. Even if you write down 1,000 ideas and go through the process, then you just mastered going through the process. But please write them down. There's something powerful about going through a system. You know, I'm a huge fan of Remarkable, the electronic notebook. And use something that you can access quickly, your phone, whatever, but write this idea down. Something happens in your brain as you translate that into written words. Two, I tell people, listen, I had no connections. A lot of people see me now and they're like, well, your parents were an investment banker. No, like I had no connections. My parents were worried about what I was doing. My parents actually thought the tech space was a Ponzi scheme with another name on it. They were just like, how are these companies being sold for hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars, right? But one of the things that I tell people is relationships are so powerful. Powerful. Like I look at my career trajectory and probably 90% of the wealth that I've built has been tied to relationships. Going out there and saying, hey, I need a mentor. I literally go out and ask people to mentor you that are 10 years ahead and say, hey, I need to figure out how to get there. You would be surprised. A portion of my time that every week just goes to mentoring people. And basically what they're doing is they're building companies that are going to hire the mentors that my kids are going to need, right? And that's how we got to think about generations ahead, right? Please get the right mentors, right? And along the way, one of the fascinating things about physicians, right, is that a lot of these ideas don't require a lot of money. There are tons of venture capital companies that basically will lend you money, but they're going to take a percentage of your company. I taught myself how to code, right? I joined a random contest. There's tons of these along the way. Like they can do it. And the great thing also about like people in the clinical field is, hey, we actually have disposable income. Some of you guys might be like, actually, no, we don't. We're in so much debt. Da, 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 da. You know what? My first year, I lived off of less than 65 grand with my wife as a marriage, right? And that was our budget. We drove used cars. We did what we had to do.
Live like a resident.
No matter what our income. And that's okay. And that literally, that was a residence out. And that was okay. And the rest, you know, we were able to save, pay off debt, and go and try new things. And you know, what's funny is our end goal is really to basically one day be able to give up 90% of our income and live off of 10%. And right now we still live with the mindset of like, hey, we spend a little bit more than 65K because now we have two kids, but we still live with that mindset of like, actually, no, we don't need a new Beamer. We don't need a Mercedes, right? We want to build generational wealth and we have to treat money with utmost respect. And part of it's tied to like my parents' story and being janitors, right? Another part is understanding that being financially wise is what allows you to go out and try these new ideas. Like you cannot buy a new car every year and think you're going to be able to take the sacrifices of building new ideas. Nor should your idea be the reason to fund your lifestyle that you've already acquired, right? Like there's a scarcity moment that should happen at the beginning that I went through. And it was so instrumental in how you build and scale companies that when down the line, when we built companies that were investor led, they saw how I treated money and said, you know what? I want to give you money because I know every dollar is going to have three jobs. This is a wise investment.
Yeah. I like that. Every dollar has three jobs.
Yeah.
Words to live by.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's just pick one of the companies. Let's stick with Tele911. How did you take that idea and then branch that out and find partners like Kaiser Network?
Absolutely. So one of the things that I did is I wasn't always a CEO. And this is something physicians can do any day. Set yourself up as a consultant or advisor. There's a ton of clinical knowledge that you have that some of these tech companies need. You know, one of the things I tell doctors to do is go out and pick five companies and tell them you want to be a consultant for them. And then have three of them that you're going to meet with them once a month and just get shares. Don't take money from them. Two, you'll take a partial pay from them, right? And then you have five companies. And out of those five companies, all you need is one to exit. And that's your mortgage and your student loan and your a good living, right? All you need is one exit, right? Think about it. Some of these companies are selling for billions of dollars. And if you were to trade just your time for shares, think about the people who, there's actually a person who painted walls at Facebook headquarters in exchange for shares. And he basically got like $1 million. That's his thing. He was like, yeah, I know how to paint. I want to make your walls. I just want shares. Like, think about that, how you're able to trade. And these, you know, these companies, I can name 10 of them that need physicians who understand how the system works, who understand the frustration of like EMRs and physicians, right? And they should be able to apply it there. So these are the kind of things that I feel like I had a ton of value creation, for sure. Because I had spent enough time in the space, I already had a network of VCs, right? And I still do. And actually, once you build the trajectory, it seems it's more of a, hey, what's Ramon doing next? Because we want to be part of that rocket ship. But at the very beginning, it wasn't like that. It was literally like moms and pops, let's figure out how much we can scrunch together. How much do we need to keep the light on next month? It's hard. It is. And you know what's crazy? It's humbling because you already did your time as clinician. You can go out and make 250, 350, 400. And what you're saying is, I'm going to live off the scraps and I'm going to basically go build something that's bigger than I am. Right. And then I also want to let you know that 99% of those companies fail. Right. Which is what's even more discouraging. Right. But if you could be part of that 1%, your great, great grandkids won't have to ever worry about money. And the thing is, physicians are the best position to succeed because one, they know hard work. They know how the healthcare system works. I think about some of these companies built not by physicians. And if they just had a physician, they would accelerate 3x. So now these roles as CMOs, chief medical officers, are being opened at a lot of these companies in order to get clinical wisdom at the strategy level. And I tell physicians all the time, please apply for those roles. Take one, even if it's for 2 years, and watch that. And then write in best, right? Like, for sure. And you'll get paid a hefty salary to do it.
How do you go about finding those companies and finding the CMO positions that are out there? Is there any secret to it?
There's no secret. They're all listed on Indeed. And the good thing is there's only a limited amount of physicians that actually apply. They're actually really hard to fill because people are afraid. You know, for some reason, physicians feel like, oh, I don't know if I could do that. And what I'm telling you is you can. You don't need an MBA. They're not hiring you for an MBA because if so, they would have just hired the MBA alone. What they want is someone with a clinical expertise who knows how things work, right? Or how they don't work. All these positions are on LinkedIn. Create a LinkedIn account. Engage with people. Get your name out there. Express your frustrations. And I've seen this before on LinkedIn about the healthcare system. And you know what happens? Their VCs looking out for people like you saying, hey, this person hates that as much as I do. I think they're going to, they have the wisdom to build something. Let's help them build a company around that. You know?
I love it. And you said you do a lot of mentoring. Any last words of advice that you tend to give physicians?
Yeah. So I cannot stress this enough. One of the things that I tell people is just the value in humility and mentoring, understanding that there's a lot that you do not know. As a matter of fact, the more that I know, I realize there's just even more that I don't know. When it comes to mentoring, if you seek out the right mentors with that humility aspect, which by the way, it's hard for physicians because we're trained to know all the answers 100% of the time, right? And saying, I don't know, it's weird. It's actually frowned upon, but no, like saying, I don't know and I want to find out. I encourage people to go out and do that. I mentor physicians in groups all the time. And I do believe that there are going to be people that I'm going to be mentoring that are going to build the next Amazon or Google or Facebook. I believe that. I know that, right? But one of the key things that I look for is people who say, I just don't know. Actually, the most insecure people are probably the people that succeed the most out of me, which is fascinating because they're the most moldable. Right? They're the most just inquisitive and saying, I don't know, but I want to know. I think this is an important component of success.
I feel like that's most of the people I know. I feel like we all suffer that imposter syndrome. Like we're supposed to know, but maybe we don't know.
Exactly. And it's so humble. I tell people, it's like, we have to bat 500 every time. And I'm just like, wait, no, it's okay to say you don't know. And just be encouraged by honestly, the journey of not knowing and figuring out the answer, right?
That's kind of the fun part.
Exactly. And like now that I'm, you know, 12, actually in total 15 years in, I find myself in a room of physicians where I don't speak their language much anymore. Like I understand clinical concept, but listen, I don't mind not putting a Band-Aid on someone for the rest of my life. Like it's just who I've become, right? And I realized, hey, there's just a bunch of stuff that I don't know that I don't know if I forgot or maybe it's come out lately. I do not know. But one of the things that they appreciate is, hey, Ramon's a clinician and he's willing to ask, right? Even though he's a thought leader in this field, he's willing to ask. He wants to know. And I think it just ties into the example that they're able to reciprocate as well on that.
Are there any types of groups or seminars or conferences that physicians can go to try and learn some of these techniques, make contacts, anything you would recommend there?
Well, first, they should listen to your podcast. Yeah, okay. They should. So there's a lot of conferences in healthcare that physicians aren't attending right now. There's Rise Health that happens in Nashville every year. It's actually happening next week. There's Health, HLTH, that happens in Vegas every year, every October. And these are conferences specifically geared towards physician entrepreneurs. And you should go out there and just see the, it's 10,000 people building companies. It's thousands of investors looking for people like you who are saying, hey, I built this thing. How do I grow it? How do I build it? How do I take it about, you know? And along the way, I found I myself go over there to just look at the companies that I want to basically invest my time in. I do, like, there was a recent company called Vital Audio by this PhD student from NYU. He figured out how to take vitals through voice. So like in this conversation, he could figure out my heart rate.
Oh my God.
And he has a patent for that. And I realized, oh my God, think about that idea. He just didn't know how to build a company. So he came to me and I ended up through a reference crossing with him at Health. And I said, wait, I want in. I think this could change the face of healthcare, right? Through a phone call. So it's just ideas like that that you're going to find there. And through the moment of collaboration, there's also Vibe, which happened last week. So Rise, Health, HLTH, and Vibe would be the three main conferences that I tell people, please go. Worst case, you just love the energy in the room. And then next year, you come back with your own idea.
That sounds amazing. Ramon, thank you so much for coming on the show. You've been a wealth of information. And like I said, I thought it was going to be this little podcast about this really cool company that you came up with, but I didn't realize what an entrepreneur you've been for so many years.
Yeah, no worries, Tammy. Honestly, grateful for the time. And above all, like, I hope this podcast inspires clinical leaders. It doesn't matter what stage you're at, a nurse, LPN, doctor, it doesn't matter. Like, believe in yourself and take that risk. You already did it once with clinical, right? Like with medical school, like go out and take that risk and bet on you. And I hope to see you on the stage one day next to me and Google and everyone else saying, hey, look at what I built. By the way, I'm really accessible. People can find me on LinkedIn at RamonR.Luzardo. And on the LinkedIn is my email. I try to get back to everyone, particularly people wanting mentorship. I logically can't, but I want to make sure that everyone knows I believe in you. And I don't even know what your idea is. And keep grinding at it. That's important.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for coming on the show. I appreciate all of your time and expertise.
Sounds great. Thank you so much, Tammy. You be well. You have a great day.
You too. And thank you all for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week for Grand Rounds.
Now a final word from our sponsor. At Pearson Rabbits, they understand that life can change in an instant. Visit www.pearsonrabbits.com today and embark on a journey of safeguarding your future.